and the entire leadership of the DCOP management. Also to welcome Monkeys, I see you are back in fine shape and Hessen. Welcome. Then I need to deal with the following apologies quickly. Honorable Joe still on sick leave. Honorable Mabika still on sick leave. And then in our midst, let me also welcome the EDG for Traditional Affairs. EDG Mkhaladin. We have an apology from DG Dipofa. Then let me confirm the attendance of the following members in our meeting. Honorable Steve, good morning.
There's also, sorry, Chair, that DG is also here.
I did say that. Welcome, DG, entire management.
Yes,
thank you, Minister.
Also, National Treasurer is here.
National Treasurer is also here. I was not given the list of the delegation of the National Treasurer. Can we see you from Treasury side?
Hertin is here. Probably is the one leading the delegation. Jan Hertin.
Mr. Hertin, with whom are you in the meeting?
Good morning, Honorable Chair. We've got about six or seven of our team members. Those colleagues that's responsible for each province is with me, so we in total about eight or nine people, Chairperson.
Can you quickly identify them for me? You know your colleagues, I suppose.
Yes, Honorable Chair, it's Kavita. Yes. Rupal is with us. I've got Majaji is with us. I've got Sofiso with us. I have Komotso with us. I have Willem Voigt with us. I have Mandla Gilemani with us. And I think, who is this? If there's anybody, perhaps they can just remind us who I've missed, the chairperson. So it's about six or eight of us.
Okay. Thank you. Then I want to confirm the Honorable Buthelezi. Welcome back, Chair. Good morning to you. Honorable Pitika Ventura. Welcome. Then we have Honorable Keza, good morning. Honorable Khunevat, Honorable Mpumza, Honorable Brinks, Honorable Steve, and Honorable Mkaliki. These are the members that I can see in the meeting. Did I commit someone? No one. Then let me also welcome the DG and the entire senior management team from DCOP. I see it is a sizable number of colleagues from the department to DCOP here. Then we then need to start our meeting to welcome you all to this meeting. And we want to thank you, Minister, together with the Treasury team, for making it to this meeting. This is a meeting, it's a continuation of the meeting that we had on the 3rd of August 2021, where we discussed the implementation of the resolution, government resolutions relating to the findings of the State of Local Government report. Following the tabling of the report, that government considered, we informed it that meeting that the Department of Cooperative Governance and a national surgery who were directed to lead the process of developing municipal support plans in collaboration with provinces. And that included also the municipalities themselves, the affected municipalities, and the other affected departments. And then we will also bring that a cabinet resolve that the Department of Cooperative Governance and Treasury, they are going to also take a lead in identifying those municipalities that warrant intervention and also advise on the mode of intervention and that should be applied. And then with regard to the identified candidates, it has included municipalities that the Department of Cooperative Governance needed to take over in terms of Section 189.7 of the Constitution. And then in this meeting that I've referred to of the 3rd of August 2021, a list of 64 municipalities were presented to us. It was dysfunctional. But the focus was mainly on those in the Northwest Province, because we're dealing with the matter of the Northwest Province. Then also, that was the resolution of the committee that we also wanted a countrywide analysis encompassing all the 64 municipalities that are identified as dysfunctional. And then when browsing today's presentation, it indicates that 26 of these municipalities are already under constitutional intervention. Which then leaves the question mark for us as a committee as to the action plan in respect to the outstanding 38 municipalities. We were also informed that National Treasury and Provincial Coopers, as well as the Provincial Treasuries, they are implementing a package of interventions to assist these municipalities. But like I indicated, however, at the time of the 16th, of the 3rd of August 2021, our focus was on the Northwest. We therefore wanted a detailed report on the packages, focusing on the whole country. There were also time frames presented with regard to the development of the municipal support and intervention package. And the process was also in its stage 2. Concluded by the end of next month. And then when you read that presentation that was presented to us, some of the deadlines have already since passed, and the department then must therefore advise us on whether the relevant milestones have been achieved as it was envisaged. Finally, the issue that we want to raise before we proceed, the committee has been requesting some closed-out reports from the previous Section 139.1b interventions, just to understand exactly what the administrators have been doing, particularly when some municipalities remain dysfunctional despite previous constitutional interventions. We made the same request in the previous meeting, but it has been complied with, and I want to take note of this and also correct it. Having said that, then I want to again welcome you all, and then I will hand over to you, Minister, if there are some introductory remarks you want to make, and then you will also give us a directive as to who's going to lead us in the presentation. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll just show my face once and then close because my internet is not very good this morning, if you allow me to do that. Good morning, Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee, Treasury team and the Co-Op team. I don't have a lot to say, but maybe just to say that the two teams will present, they're working together. But on the closeout reports, I'm not sure that any of us can give you closeout reports unless we are also giving, because members of the portfolio committee would recall that the 139 is the provinces that appoint the administrators. They are the ones who get the closeout reports or not get the closeout reports. So we can't produce them unless they give them to us. Thank you. But at this point, I'll allow the team so that you don't waste time to present. From our side, it's the DG and Mahana who lead from the Costa side. I don't know whether it's Mr. Hetting from the Treasury, they'll say, who is presenting from their side. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. Over to you, Tim Dikok.
Good morning to the Honourable Chairperson and to the Honourable Members. And I want to greet our Minister and Deputy Minister this morning and to all colleagues from National Treasury and to the DCOP team. Honourable Chair, our presentation will be led by Mohamed Mamikana. And perhaps maybe just for me to say that we post the cabinet decision having the consultants and the provinces and departments where we have the communicated the cabinet decision. And of course the department has the evidence framework means to guide the process.
Just in your room that making echoes. Are you in the room with colleagues?
There's
a terrible echo. Can you sort your gadget so that we can hear you? We are just hearing the echo instead of hearing you.
Is that it now, Chairperson?
It's getting bad. I wonder what is it.
No, I don't, Chairperson.
In the meantime, when Mohana is presenting, I think you have to look at that. There's an echo because colleagues will struggle to me.
Okay, thanks, Chairman. I'll hand over to Mohana then to present.
Okay.
Thank you. Over to Mohana.
For the introduction. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, Honourable Minister and Deputy Minister, DG and colleagues. As indicated that we reported that we are in the process of developing the local government support and intervention strategies, what I will be presenting today is the presentation that okay. The purpose of the presentation is to provide progress report to the Portfolio Committee on the development and finalization of the local government support and intervention package as identified in the State of Local Government Report. The State of Local Government Report was presented to Cabinet. This was following a court order that directed the Minister of Finance and our Minister, the Minister of COCTA, to place LIGWA under Section 1397. And during that time, between ourselves and National Treasury, 43 municipalities were identified as dysfunctional. We can understand what the cabinet then directed COCTA and in working with National Treasury to do an in-depth analysis of all municipalities in the country. And 21 more municipalities were then identified. So we actually went and assessed all 257 municipalities. And this was presented presented to cabinet, and cabinet then resolved that COPTA and National Treasury should lead the process on the development of the municipal support plans in collaboration with sector departments, SALGA, provinces and municipalities themselves. That secondly, COPTA in collaboration with the provinces should identify candidates for intervention and propose the relevant mode of intervention that should be applied. The State of Local Government report covered the political, governance, administrative, financial management and service delivery issues as the pillars of back to basics. We then categorized municipalities using the pillars into dysfunctional, medium to high risk, low risk, and those that are stable. And the outcome of that assessment confirms the correlation between failures in governance and political oversight as the primary causes underpinning the increase in the number of municipalities that are dysfunctional in the country. The state of this is what we utilized to assess and measure performance of municipalities, as I have already indicated. So those that are dysfunctional are categorized as having challenges in all the five key performance areas, as indicated on this slide. And these are the high-level indicators that were used to categorize municipalities as dysfunctional, medium risk, low risk, and those that are stable. This slide, Honorable Chairperson and members, shows the spread in terms of the barometer that we used of where these municipalities are in the country, the dysfunctional, medium risk, low risk, and the stable, as you can see on this slide, the where the 64 are and the medium to low risk. In the State of Local Government report, we also reported the number of municipalities who are under financial stress. Municipal reporting will present more, will elaborate more on this. The 163 that have been identified, which are in financial distress. And also that within the 163, those that have adopted unfunded budgets. This slide shows where these municipalities are in the country, that in Eastern Cape there's 11 that are dysfunctional, Free State 11, Gauteng 2, KZN 11, Limpopo 3, Mpumalanga 6, Northwest 10, Northern Cape 9, and Western Cape 4, which comes to that 64. And the other columns show how many are in the medium risk and low risk, and which ones are green in terms of the categorization per province. This slide then shows the names of these 64 municipalities that are dysfunctional. And as the Honorable Chairperson has indicated, that out of these 64, the ones that we are indicated in red are the ones that are already under Section 139, which means they are still dysfunctional. This is the list of the municipalities that are under Section 139. It's just a repetition of what I've just presented now. This is the legislative framework for the support and intervention. For the support section, it is required in terms of Section 154 of the Constitution that national government and provincial government by legislative and other measures must support and strengthen the capacity of municipalities to manage their own affairs. Hence, this collaboration between national and provinces to support municipalities to develop their support plans. And further, we are saying that in terms of the Section 155 of the 6 of the Constitution, provincial governments are to monitor and support municipalities to develop their capacity to enable them to perform their functions and manage their affairs. You will see Honorable Chairperson where the application of these are. And between the spheres of government, we are then in the principle, using the principle of cooperative governance, the multi stakeholder teams will then support the intervention part of the support identified the modes of interventions that would be proposed should the municipality be a candidate for section 139. And I will explain that as I continue. In order for us to deal with the challenges identified in the state of local government, collaboratively with provinces, SALGA and National Treasury, we have developed a guide to ensure that these support plans are developed, they are implemented, and they are monitored and reported upon. And the primary purpose is to identify targeted actions that should be undertaken. And these actions should be impactful to effectively respond and eliminate challenges that are currently pervasive in these municipalities. And where decisive actions have to be taken, the framework indicates that such. And the process for the development of the MSIP is also informed by the diagnostic analysis that I have just indicated. So between National Treasury and ourselves, we're leading the multidisciplinary support teams comprising of national, provincial, sector departments and SALGA to develop these plans, specifically starting with the 64 municipalities in the context of the DDM, and I'll talk about that, how the DDM champions then would support this process to ensure that where the challenges need unlocking by the political champions, such should be done. We are also saying, Honorable Chairperson, that the support plans should also be institutionalized to ensure that even post the local government elections, the challenges that have been identified are dealt with until the end. So municipalities then will be expected to incrementally incorporate these challenges into their IDPs so as to deal decisively with the challenges that have been identified in the state of local government election, state of local government report. We have held meetings with our counterparts in the provinces, and we have issued a circular that guides municipalities and all stakeholders in terms of what needs to be done. As indicated, we have had bilateral meetings, as we have also done was to, as they go to the provinces, go together, national, provincial teams and provincial caucus and treasuries, and in also engagement with the sector departments who should be part of these teams. And currently, both teams are engaging the 64 municipalities to develop the municipal support and intervention plans. Chairperson, if I may answer your question in terms of what was presented in terms of the dates that have already passed. We had a meeting with the provinces subsequent to the development of the framework and agreements that were done with them. And provinces have indicated that they need more time because this process needs to be needs further engagement together with the municipal councils and the provincial ESCOs. So for them to be able to make sure that all processes have been concluded and the support and intervention plans are adopted by both council and the provincial ESCOs, they then requested that this the date be moved to the end of September, and that was agreed to, so that we do a detailed work. And I must say that already in terms of Northwest, the Premier and the MECs for COPTA and Treasury were also engaged by the Deputy Minister to develop these, to communicate the resolutions, and work has already started. In terms of the collaboration between ourselves and National Treasury in terms of the interventions, we realize that there are challenges across the all provinces in the application, implementation and monitoring of municipalities under intervention. We therefore then developed what we call interventions collaborative model, which seeks to guide the interactions between national COCTA and Treasury in implementing the Section 139, so that we move closer to these municipalities that are under intervention, and to propose also an establishment of a multidisciplinary team, including SALGA, to ensure that the intervention yields the intended results. And collaborations also guides the important COCTAs and treasuries to work together in the implementation of these interventions, so for the intended outcomes, but also to indicate the role of supporting institutions in the process and to provide clarity to municipalities how interventions will in future be invoked, monitored, managed and terminated. And this is part, Chairperson, of our consultations between on the MC Bill, which was also presented. So the Deputy Minister of Finance and the Deputy Minister of COCTA conducted roadshows to present this intervention collaboration model, which has been discussed with the provinces. And we further in effecting the interventions collaborative model, develop criteria for each mode of intervention to guide us into identifying those candidates for intervention in terms of section 139. I'm sorry, section 139 and 137 of the MFMA. The next slide, Honorable Chairperson, indicates the framework itself that has been agreed to. And I've already indicated that the framework focuses on the legislative mandate in terms of how we support municipalities, but also the criteria for the mode of intervention. And we further detail critical milestones for the development of the MSIPs, and roles and responsibilities for each sphere of government, and the focus also of what needs to be done by the three spheres of government in the short term, medium and long term, and how the implementation would proceed, and how the monitoring and reporting would then unfold. With regards to the short term interventions as adopted by Cabinet, we are making sure as the teams go to the provinces that there should be fast tracking of the repairs and maintenance of water infrastructure, sanitation, potholes, attending to street lights and attending to sewer spillages as part of service delivery. And all municipalities should also make an effort, specifically the municipal councils, into ensure that is to participate, but also vandalism and theft of public infrastructure in collaboration with sector departments. This is an example of public transport infrastructure, fighting gangsterism and criminal activities in collaboration with SAPS and other departments where there is such in terms of some of the tender processes that are being interfered with, and also operationalization of the Structures Act and the System Act, which coincide with the commencement of the next term of local government, specifically on the Structures Act, enforcing the compliance with the MPACs, amongst others. We are also saying that in the short term, we'll conduct an in-depth assessment of municipalities that are already under Section 139, which I have just presented, to deal with areas that need urgent attention by, amongst others, deploying technical support teams and also the participation of the DDM political champion to unblock the persistent challenges. And the reason why we're doing that is because we want to make sure that these municipalities that are already under Section 139 are assisted and supported to get out of Section 139. One of the things that we have identified, which was communicated also by the two deputy ministers during the roadshows, is that provinces tend to sometimes deploy or appoint an administrator only, rather than having a multi-team to deal with all the challenges that have been identified. In the medium term, this relates more to internally to the national department, that we need to make sure that municipalities are supported to develop asset management plans using 5% of the MIG, restricting land invasion and facilitating housing development, seek land and housing development opportunities closer to work opportunities. This deals with more on spatial planning, provide equitable and consistent accessible transport for the low-income groups. So here we're looking at supporting municipalities in their totality. Supporting municipalities to ensure that all senior managers meet the minimum competency requirements as provided for in the regulations. This is what has been done, but we're strengthening that part. An appointment to teams, as I said, so that they can be supported and to make sure that they move out of being dysfunctional. And provinces to intensify support to MPATs, but also facilitating settlement arrangements with ESCOM and voter boards on debt owed. And this is the part that is facilitated by the deputy president to ensure that municipalities pay what what they owe. But we're also saying support municipalities with improvement of their customer data management, record management, and information and communications to assist them to make sure that whilst we are doing this work, we also assist them to ensure that they improve on their audit outcomes and reduce debt to owe to municipalities with the campaign for pay for services for the communities. The next one is implementation and the roles and responsibilities. We are indicating that municipalities should play an active part and ownership in the development of these support plans so that they take ownership, but also we support them to do that. We are also seeing municipalities should get approval from councils to ensure that these MSIPs are institutionalized in municipalities, that they should be a standing agenda item in the council for monitoring and reporting purposes, but also that the reports should be submitted on a quarterly basis to provincial coopers and treasuries, and that there should be institutionalization, which I have also spoken about, even beyond the election, so that we sustain the support and we do not leave them to fall back. The responsibilities of the district municipalities is to ensure that the political and technical IGR forums are functional and that they deal with progress on these MSITs, and they establish also work streams that deal with each of the pillars to make sure that we keep our eye on the ball, to make sure that we together as the 3 spheres of government deal with these issues as indicated in the state of local government. And that to ensure that these are adopted by municipal councils. Roles to make sure that the departments participate in the development and hence the person this this the dates so that everyone else become part of this process to ensure that these MSIPs are adopted by the provincial executives, thus holding them accountable for the oversight, and that the departments should then, provincial departments should coordinate the reports which should be presented at provincial expos and submitted to national on a quarterly basis. The participation of also the provincial DDM champions, as you may be aware, honorable members, that in addition to the national political DDM champions, MSCs have been allocated in the provinces, the districts where they need to make sure that they deal with the challenges that are facing these municipalities, including unblocking a catalytic project where required. The role of national is to lead these teams as indicated, but also we have developed that criteria for classification of municipalities, and then see that these MSPs are developed and submitted. And in collaboration with the provinces, mobilized support from sector departments and the DDM political champions I've spoken about, but most importantly, to make sure that these MSIPs do not only end in being developed, but they are implemented and the quarterly reports are presented to the IGR structures such as MINEC, PCC, including Cabinet. This slide, honorable members, indicates the time frames that has been agreed to on what I've just indicated. The monitoring and evaluation of these support plans would be done also jointly to make sure, but what is also important is that the reporting will be synchronized with the current local government reporting reform so that we don't put the burden on municipalities. It must be an integrated approach, that the packages will also continue beyond local government elections, and consistent reporting for the implementation is required. And that provincial caucus consolidated progress reports are submitted. We, as national caucus and treasury, will consolidate the reports, and which will be presented in the relevant structures. This slide shows the reporting, how the reporting will happen at the district IGR forums, MINEC, caucus, MINEC, Presidential Coordinating Committee, Cabinet, and Parliamentary Oversight Committees. As I conclude, Honorable Chairperson and members, it is proposed that the Portfolio Committee notes that both National COCTA and Treasury, in collaboration with the Provincial COCTAs and Treasuries, are leading the process of developing and the implementation of the municipal support and intervention packages, and that the relevant sector departments form part of these teams, and that the committee should note the process for the development of these support plans for the 64 municipalities is still unfolding and will be finalized by end of September. Thank you very much, Chairperson. That is the end of my presentation.
Thank you. Mr. Hassan, can I hand over to you, please?
Honourable Chair, with your permission, unfortunately I don't have a slide presentation, but with your permission I can make a verbal input. Unfortunately we only got the invitation yesterday, and that's not an excuse.
Because I'm on the treasurer website.
Yes, so
I think what you can do that, but later you'll send us a written one, eh?
You can do that, Chairperson. For record purposes.
Yes.
I will certainly do that, Chairperson. So
can I ask you to remove the presentation on the screen so that you are able to see you on your video and we see you, Mr. Hattie?
Thanks, Honourable Chair.
Where are you? Can I show your voice?
Can you see me, Chair?
Let me check the colleagues. Yes, now yes, I can see you. You can proceed.
So, Chair, although the National Treasury actively participates, obviously our focus is slightly different than the COCTA team that is complementary. So I think I need to kick off, and my colleague has already referred to the provincial roadshows that our two deputy ministers has assisted us to go through. The objective for that roadshow is by a study that the Treasury commissioned in 2017. We took the results of that study to the Budget Council and the Budget Forum, and the Treasury was requested to develop a program of action. And the roadshows is one of the first steps to give effect to that program of action. And essentially what the objective of the roadshows were, Chair, and I believe a former Deputy Minister of COCTA has had a discussion with this House to give you insight on the outcome of that study. But essentially, the application of the legislative framework, as well as the constitutional provisions, the study revealed that there was not a consistent application, and as a result, a correct application of what has been perceived to be the hierarchy that the Constitution prescribed. When do a section 154 start and stop, and when does the section 139 intervention framework kick in? So, Chair, we have had the roadshows, very active participation from all provinces, both the political arm as well as the provincial treasury team and the COCTA equivalent team. So thanks to the deputy ministers to assist us with that process. It was about awareness. It was about a uniform application of the intervention framework and to make sure that in the future we succeed with the interventions that's required by the Constitution. Chair, the two focus areas that the Treasury are focusing on is essentially, on the one hand, the out of the 64 municipalities, the 43 that my colleague referred to, the Treasury is obviously focusing on that as a start. And the second area of focus is the unfunded budgets. And I'll try to explain both in a minute, Chairperson. So the National Treasury Chair produces every year the State of Local Government Finance and Financial Management Reform. That was a key informant into the process that COCTA has outlined and shared. The person in that report, we used to track the performance across all 257 municipalities. There's a set of those indicators, and we have information across those 13 indicators. And as a result, the outcome is to indicate that these municipalities are in financial distress. That's a step, Chair, before a crisis. And the intention of that report, and we've done it for 10 consecutive years, is to alert municipalities that they need to do something. If not, they are going to fall into the trap of being into a crisis. So, Chair, that report is on our website, and I think I have shared the linkage where the members of the House can find that report on our website. And obviously, we're busy with the next report for the next cycle. Chairperson, as far as the second focus area, the 43 municipalities, so it's in the same basket of targeted municipalities that COCTA referred to, the 64, but those 43 municipalities, Chairperson, in our opinion, is beyond a Section 154 stage. And therefore, the mode of intervention is really that we would like to get right. We have been agreed as a result of an earlier cabinet resolution that was taken place on the 12th of May with the support of COGTA to get the provinces to apply the correct measure of intervention in that 43 municipalities. Chair, the time frames are very similar to what COGTA has shared with you. So we hope by the end of August, we've done the technical work with provincial treasuries, and we would like to get to a point where there's absolutely consensus on the mode of intervention. And the next step will then be for the Minister of Finance to write to the premiers and essentially issue a directive on the mode of intervention. Because if you have passed the criteria, as my colleague has outlined, and the criteria for financial crisis is articulated, Chairperson, in Section 138 and Section 140 of the MFMA. Chair, coincidentally, we have now started to publish that information as part of our Section 71. And the legislation in this case, Chair, is not saying that you may. The wording in the legislation is you must. So, Chairperson, it's important for us to make sure that if a municipality meet the legislative requirement, that we then escalate it to the next mode of intervention as per the Constitution and as per the roadshows that we have communicated. So, Chair, we hope to have absolute consensus with the provinces by the end of August. And then we will obviously ask the minister to then communicate with the provinces. The minister of COGTA is correct. Provinces, the way our constitution is designed, have to take the first step. If they then fail, Chair, then the national government have to intervene as per the Lekwa case. Chair, the second focus area is on the municipalities with unfunded budgets. Chair, in terms of Section 18 of MFMA, the council of a municipality are not allowed to table an unfunded budget. We've worked with this process, firstly, to develop a methodology. We have then issued a budget and reporting regulation with the endorsement of Parliament in 2009. We have managed to implement this by training each and every municipality, each and every provincial treasury, so that we use a uniform application when we assess a municipality. And we have managed to obtain the Budget Council as well as the Budget Forum political decision and recently a cabinet resolution dated the 12th of May to say that no unfunded budget will be allowed to continue in the future. So, Chair, the process and the 108 municipalities that we are targeting, we are working towards the second installment of the equitable share that is due to be released on the 7th of December. So, Chair, we are working with the provincial treasuries. So it's part of this basket of support that we're providing. As I said, our focus is slightly different, but it's complementary. And by the 7th of December, Chair, we hope that we can influence those municipalities to a funded adjustment budget. So, Chair, counterparts, we have again explained to them the procedure. So although we would like by the end of August to conclude the mode of the interventions, as well as the work that COGTA is doing on the support plans, but from a treasury perspective, Chair, to get the municipalities to conform to the Budget Council, Budget Forum, and the cabinet resolution, we hope that the adjustment budget that municipalities normally table in February, between the 25th of January and 25th of February that we can change that unfunded status to a very close to zero. See, by implication, what it means, if a municipality and the council adopt unfunded budget, by implication, it means a guaranteed liquidity crisis in most municipalities. So, Chair, we've went through a systematic process, and we have brought the number down, but we want to achieve a zero where no municipalities in the future will be allowed to table an unfunded budget. Chair, the endorsement by the Budget Council and the Budget Forum then implied that if those municipalities refuse to work and do the right thing, Chairperson, then the National Treasury will invoke Section 2162 of the Constitution, which by implication meant, Chair, that we will not release any equitable share or any grant funding to those municipalities. And that political endorsement, Chair, was given to us during the cabinet meeting of the 12th of May. So, Chair, to summarize, we are working and we're improving the relationship between us and COCTA. Secondly, Chair, although we participate in these meetings, the Treasury's got two focus areas. Firstly, to get the 43 as a priority. That's our first priority. The second priority is to deal decisively will be 108 municipalities that have unfunded. And Chair, that in a nutshell is then our contribution as Team Finance to help to solve this problem. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
There is no industrialization taking place to improve the situation.
that while that is the case, what is the regard in terms of what appears IP? What criteria will you use to improve that particular situation in those rural municipalities? The second one, Chair, must relate to gangsterism. Maybe the police should come to the meeting and just lay out as to how and when will these things happen. Because chief amongst issues that Chairperson has caused has made failures, as we had alluded to in previous meetings, is the issues of projects within municipalities and the issues pertaining to the political influence and the issues relating to the audit teams in some instances having gone to the VAL in those areas in the VAL in that municipality, where we discovered some people were shot and some people were intimidated when conducting audits. Maybe we should start there and look at how the audit teams will be protected, because those are human beings and people's and fathers to children and families and breadwinners. And it can't be that it will be business as usual when things like this happen. And my interest, Chairperson, is how is this particular model going to make that different? We have a situation in the municipalities right now. The MSI IP says this, that it will then be part of the 6 interventions that have not been successful, Chairperson. And then, while that is the case, the morality of the municipal staff is very, very low. The morale of the municipal staff is very low. And coupled with the non-response of both the political and administration of municipal leadership to the challenges besetting communities, I've sent I think day before yesterday a municipal manager of Steve Chwete local municipality, a councillor, a loan that was taken on the basis of filling the fiscal gap. Now, how is this going to change that particular culture where councillors who are voted for by in confidence by the people want to raise these issues are threatened by the administrators verbatim, saying that you don't know me. You must ask the people where I come from, in the municipalities where I come from. If you expose this particular thing, you will have yourself to blame. Verbatim. And now we must then accept that this particular new mode will then upon just the cost that it will bring to kickstart this particular thing. Not have shown us in terms of the improvements even within the district development model. That is the first problem. And Chairperson, when it comes to we will always have a problem with a campaign that is one-sided that says that people must pay. We are for that. Those who are paying must pay. We are for that. We are clear on that. But we are going to have a problem with a one-sided a project that says you must pay without industrializing municipalities to ensure that there is no tension that has been deliberately created to say that those who can pay are the only ones that will be stifled to pay for the others, whereas government, which is voted for by the people, can actually deliberately industrialize and massively industrialize, particularly rural areas, in terms of ensuring that it improves the revenue collection, and it actually improves the lives of our people in terms of the constitution. So we will always have a problem, because that in the long term will create a tension wherein now it will obviously have issues with the municipality. And secondly, I want to go to this thing of slide 5 there, when you spoke about the political governance administration. You are talking about high number of informal settlements, no maintenance of infrastructure, and so on. And look, Jefferson says, violent protests are generally caused by non-response of the municipal political leadership and the administration on challenges relating to delivery of services such as water, sewers, villages, and electricity tariffs. How will this MSIP tackle this situation of leaders who cannot do the most basic thing to respond? This basically is the obstacle for lawful demonstration. It is deliberate not to respond, just to set the community on the path where there is no other option. Their back is against the wall, so that you can unleash the police on them. So you sponsor violence yourself as a state by not responding and sitting back and hoping that the communities will then forget about this thing. And then when you don't respond, and then when they start panicking, yours, because you have the monopoly of violence, you then unleash the police on them and justify that because you have the monopoly of the media and information and peddling lies to the society. So it can't be that we can allow such a situation where we are going to perpetually have models that are failing, models that are not scientifically bringing evidence in terms of the how it will then resolve the situation. And then, Chairperson, then I want to move with speed so that I can allow honourable members to also breathe. I want to complete the Chairperson. I think it's slide 14. It talks about the fight against vandalism. Maybe then the ministers need to look at this thing thoroughly. The issue of whether the department has reviewed contracts of security companies that have been outsourced from for instance, in Bears Not Yet, you outsource a company from PE, right, for a particular period, and then seven guns get lost in that money. And the specifics of that contract say that once a year, you would then have to speak to your claim from your insurance, a sum of 10 million, right? And that doesn't seem to show us where that 10 million that is claimed by the security company go. Where does it go? And then, secondly, the fight for vandalism and theft still remains, right? And while the security company minister is still in the operation of the municipality, and then while that is the case, the contract ends. It comes to an end, but the security company continues to operate. On what budget? On what budget Have you given small, have they given small, if they have advertised, have they given small, medium enterprises to actually, local, small SMMEs to actually inculcate that space? Apart from the fact that there's monies that are circulating within the province and reaching some of the officials within that province. So it needs to be thoroughly investigated and bring to the committee how is it going to ensure that this does not obtain anymore. We can't be sitting and talking while our people are going through this kind of repression. I have seen, we have seen, all of us were in the constituency period, a very long one. And if we're not going to put actions rather than having new things, new programs that need money, where you don't know the money, where the money will come from, please let us consolidate a method in which we can actually prove that this will not reverse or will not go back to the same usual tactics. I will pause there for now, Chairperson. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Kaba, over to you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, President. Let me welcome you to that. I only have two questions, Chairperson. The first one, Chair, of the 64 municipalities identified as dysfunctional, 26 are said to be already under the constitutional investigation. Of the remaining 38 dysfunctional municipalities, which will be earmarked for constitutional investigation, what is the envisaged mode of the investigation? The second one, Chair, which is the last one, in the previous presentation, the department indicated that the service delivery plan of action for the local government support and the investigation package will require approximately 3 billion rand, which will be sourced from the municipality budget, the municipality infrastructure grant, water service infrastructure grant, and the regional bulk infrastructure grant. What is the progress with regard to mobilizing this fund? Because Chairperson, today's presentation is silent on this important aspect. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Kava. Honorable Kulevan, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I only have two questions and I'll come back later with another question if it's been answered. Firstly, in terms of the IDR structure that currently is in place in municipalities, the one biggest problem with that is the non-participation of municipalities and district municipalities where such meetings is being organized. If that is the case, how are the department going to ensure participation in the new process? And secondly, in terms of the MFMI, where does it state that the municipality can adopt an unfunded budget? If you've got any clarity on that one, Chairperson, then I'll come back later.
Thank you, Honorable Colivan. Honorable Brink.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Permission to leave my video switched off because my internet connection is not great. Thanks very much. Thanks very much, Chair. I take note of the presentation and the intervention. Obviously, we look forward to the intergovernmental support monitoring and intervention bill that has been much spoken of but little seen of in recent times. But then I just want to ask a question to the whole team that has looked at this, including the Minister and her team, as well as Mr. Hutting from National Treasury, and that is, has national government considered the effect that local government legislation, so national legislation that pertains to the recruitment and procurement and other decisions of municipalities, how those laws have impacted or affected the ability of municipalities to deliver sustainable services, especially municipalities that are in trouble. Let me give you one example, and that is the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act, which through its regulations places extremely onerous obligations on municipalities to procure from certain suppliers and to achieve certain socio-economic objectives in the way that they spend their money, which is good if you've got a lot of money to spend, but if you are on the skids, if you are operating on an unfunded budget, if you're struggling to collect revenue, then it becomes more important for the purposes of delivering services to communities that whatever supplier you procure from, that you get value for money, the best value for money in the market. So, continuing with the example, if we were to somehow, and I haven't studied this, but it's an interesting prospect, if we somehow to exempt certain municipalities that are in trouble of a certain service act, they equal value for money in the market, goods and services, would that not have a positive effect on their ability to be financially sustainable and to keep on investing in services and infrastructure? So that's an example of where national legislation places onerous obligations on municipalities that do not necessarily have the ability to serve these higher aims of socioeconomic development, especially if they can't even get the basics right. I think that's an important consideration, and I'd like comment on that. Thanks very much, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Honorable Brink. Can I hand over to the Honorable Speech?
Good morning, Chairperson. Thank you so much. Chair, I only have one comment or concern, and as much as I welcome the presentation, we must, you know, I'm sure we all know that at the core of all of these interventions is that we must improve the lives of the people on the ground, you know, and we know by having these dysfunctional municipalities that people have suffered all the time. And it concerns me when the comment was made, I think by Mr. Hutton, is that in the event of there not being, you know, if non-compliance or non-adherence, that the equitable shares of those municipalities will be taken away. I understand there must be harsh measures put in place, but Chair, we know for a fact that a number of the municipalities are still not going to adhere to what has been put to them. And to me, my problem is that at the end of the day, the people that will suffer at the end, when equitable shares are not, you know, being given to municipalities, are the people on the ground. And I just think we must think of measures that is not going to have a severe, an even more severe impact on people on the ground. The other concern to me, Chair, is the fact that although these plans are, you know, detailed, and I must say there's a number of quite positive so we know what the state of many provinces are. Many provinces and premiers, MECs, that is part of this multidisciplinary team. I mean, we've just last week or 2 weeks seen MECs resign, premiers being replaced. These are the people who are incumbent, and they are the ones who are put forward to drive this and lead this and make sure that, you know, there's accountability. But we know the state of which many of these provinces are. How are we going to deal with it? There is an issue with capacity all around in terms of who we put in these municipalities. And we know we only have that little to choose from. So that, to me, Chairperson, are my concerns with regards to the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker. Can I hand over to Honourable Mkhaliti?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, can I also be allowed to switch off my video? But I just show my face that I'm here and I'm alive. Thank you, Chairperson.
Is it?
Yeah, Chair. Because there was a report last week that was circulating on the social media that I have died of COVID. So I wanted to assure the committee that I'm not reporting from heaven. I'm still here on earth. So that's why I have to show my video on. But due to my network, Chair, I will ask the permission from the Chair to switch off my video. Not that I'm dead.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
Chairperson, thanks very much for this report, of which it was requested by the committee. The reason being that we are worried as committee members across all political parties. We always maintain, Chair, that even if we like to play politics, to politicking about everything because we are political parties, but when it comes to local government, it's very difficult for us to play politics willy-nilly. I'm saying this, Chairperson, because we are also going to local elections. We don't know if it's going to take place on the 27th of October or it's going to take place next year, but it does not matter because at the end of the day, we need to go to local government elections. But going to local government elections with this state of affairs, it's not a nice thing to be proud of as South Africans. Correct on the state of local government indicators, politically, it states that infighting in council, intra-political party, division in council, divisions in caucuses, external political interference, and so on and so on. Under governance, it also talks about council not meeting as regulated, committees of council not meeting, council taking wrong decisions, and so on and so on and so on. Here we can talk until we become blue. If this political infighting, which is also in category number one, which is high risk dysfunctional, there's nothing much we can do in terms of applying laws of South Africa that govern our municipalities. That is the core of the problem, Chairperson. Of which when I follow the presentation from the department, because I'm only interested on the solution. And I'm aware, Chairperson, that I'm asking too much from the department, because there will be no solution that will come from the department if the core problem that you are faced in local government is infighting because of politics, as a result of the politics that are playing out in local government. I think we had this type of discussion here a long time ago. as the committee to say that what is happening in local government is because of infighting that is taking place. And our experience as a committee chair has taught us that when we have done our oversight, especially in Northwest, when there were two mayors. Because mayor, to be a mayor and to hold a political office in a local government, it does not mean that you must be hired. It means that you must be appointed. So who appointed you? Who appointed mayors? Let alone those processes that needs to go through the council. But it's a political decision. So if there's a political infighting, guarantee sure those municipalities which are 65 in nature, who are characterized as high risk, is functional. The reason being is that there is political infighting. So therefore the solution must come from political. The political organizations that are ruling a party must address, they must come with a clear resolution on how to ensure that this thing does not happen. When you go down with the report on the state of local government barometer, you know that the last column, which is stable green, is only 16 which are stable. One day in Mpumalanga, one day in Gauteng, 12 in Western Cape, so on. But the missing, which are more than the dysfunctional and are more than the low risk. So what does it mean in terms of administratively now? If we ought to come with solutions to these problems that you are faced as a country now, it means that we need to be told in terms of the planning from the department side, because all those things that we were told here in terms of the presentation, also from the treasurer and from COPTA, I think all of those things have been tried. Intervention in terms of 1 section 54 of the constitution, intervention in terms of 139 of the constitution, and now the department is telling us that no, we are identifying people who are going to be part and parcel of a multi-task or multidisciplinary team who's going to form part of our intervention. But our experience has also taught us that no, we have tried everything as a department. We have tried everything, but it seems as if it's not yielding any results. You know why, Chairperson? If you go down to the slide on the state of local government barometer, it also says that municipality under financial distress are 163. So there is that link between political interference, which is number one problem that needs to be solved politically, and the municipality under financial distress, of which it means that they don't have finance. Where are the finances? One colleague there talks about collecting of revenue. We as people under all municipalities in South Africa, we pay for our services. So they collect. Municipalities are collecting revenue. But you find that they can't even go back to their municipalities and say, we have collected so much, so therefore the services that needs to go to people, it also needs to be amounting to this amount that we have collected. So it means there's a political interference, there's a political solution that needs to be processed, and then corruption needs to be addressed. So, Chairperson, we are not going to sit here and pretend as if we don't know what is happening. So therefore, that's why at some point we said, this committee maybe must not even, at that time when we are going to agreed to, when are we going to meet aside with political leadership? Because these things must be frankly discussed with the political head of this committee to say that, no man, let us get it. You know, we were so excited when we made presentation about Northwest and tell us that, you know, in terms of the cabinet decision, we don't sit in cabinet. It's only a political head of this committee who sits in cabinet. We all got excited. At least the cabinet has something about this state of affairs of municipalities. That's why we said, no, can we be briefed? What the cabinet is saying, or what is the cabinet plan to deal with such crisis that we find ourselves in? We appreciate the report, painting the picture of what is happening in the country. But when it comes to solutions, we must not fool ourselves that the department will come with solutions. If the department as well is telling us that problem number one is political interference, so therefore it means political solution, Chairperson. Maybe we can be afforded that opportunity to meet with the minister, DM through DM, because three of them, they are political deployees. And the problem that we are facing in South Africa, as Honorable Spitz was also mentioning that, recently, in Northwest, Northwest is under Section 100 as a province. And there are so many municipalities that are dysfunctional. So there is no government in Northwest. As right now as we sit here, there is a new premier that was announced by a political party, the ruling party. But the old premier has not resigned. And, you know, when the crisis was also taking its toll, the very, very MEC, who was also convincing this committee that he is very much active, he is very much committed, and he's doing all in his power to ensure that as a committee, when we come to Northwest, to say that there's, but what is happening? And then that MEC was showing some commitment, and then now that MEC, we are told that he has resigned. You know why? It's because of the political interference that the department is talking about here. So my point, Chair, is that we can talk here until cows come home, but if you are not calling a spade, what is the really problem? Why we find ourselves in this quagmire is because of the politics, ruling party, the center does not hold. We saw what happened in Tswane yesterday. It was the last IEC saying that, no, please come and submit your candidates as political parties. You saw what happened today. And the minister will agree with me, for example, 1994. You know, this was not on the plan of the on the ANC. It was a compromise position. So therefore, at some point, we need to have discussion. I know it can't be ANC alone. Also, all political parties who want also to sustain or to win local government, they must also be having an open discussion to say that if we are really, really very serious about the lives of people at local government, why do we have to have provincial government? What is the role of provincial government in South Africa? Why are we not doing away with provincial government? Why are we not strengthen the local government? Because, you know, people of Tswane, when they went to IEC yesterday, demanding that the ANC Deputy Secretary General must come and address them because they don't want that list that was submitted to IEC. Instead of going to ANC offices, they opted to go to IEC. So that alone must tell you that there is a problem in South Africa. People, they don't know where to take their anger to. They take their anger to soft people in the name of IEC in this regard. So it tells you that, Chairperson, all of us, we must come to a drawing board and say, no, enough is enough. We can't continue like this and expect the departments to come with solutions while the department are not political leaders. The department, they come with the legal framework. For instance, Chairperson, not long time ago, we were told that even this year is captured in this report, telling us that political interference and so on and so on. But I was also saying in that meeting, Chairperson, you see, if we don't have proper plan, whether as a department or political parties, to fight this thing that we are facing with, we are not going to win this war at the local government elections. We don't have any warning system as political parties. So, center is not holding. For instance, in KZN, eThekwini. eThekwini is the only metro that has been seen as a stable metro out of all eight metros, if you can put that way. But now, recently, we got a message that says that twice or three times they failed to elect a deputy speaker. And we are not even given a report about why the former deputy speaker has resigned, of which that deputy speaker was as a result of an intervention. But she has opted to resign for political reasons, of which it also have a direct effect on us as abahlali baseThekwini. But now, the caucus of the ruling party who's coming in to elect a deputy speaker as a result of the whole council. So therefore, we come here and we squeeze the department to say, hey, come with solutions. We want to know. Because, as I'm saying, that metro, eThekwini Metro, is among 8 metros who have been seen as a stable metro, of which we know, which is not true, is no longer true. On the issue of water under eThekwini, Chairperson, we've been saying to them, now it's 2021, 10 years back, you were the progressive metro in the country in terms of service delivery. So you have joined the chorus of all metros, of all municipalities in terms of aging infrastructure. But no one cares to tell us why in the whole country we have an aging infrastructure. Of course, the infrastructure is old, but why they are not addressed? Why we have not budgeted for the aging infrastructure? Why all of a sudden all municipalities have aging infrastructure and no one cares to tell us how to address that with speed? Because people, as a result, they don't have water, pumps are not working, everything is collapsing, Chairperson. But at the core of the problem that we have is political interference. So therefore, the department can't solve that. So I'm saying, Chair, let us have that meeting that we once agreed. Even that meeting must not be, we can also agree that let us not allow the media to have access on the day, because we need to have a sort of a very, very genuine conversation with political head of this department to say that, no, what can be done? The situation has been in this situation for a longest time while our people are suffering. It's very painful because at the end of the day, Chairperson, people are suffering, are the poorest of the poor, are people who do not have money, but are always want to pay for their services. So therefore, let us have a genuine conversation about this crisis, Chairperson. As much as I said that, you know, we are very, very happy to receive this kind of a report to paint us a picture, but let us not think that this presentation with solutions here is going to solve our problems, because our problems start with infighting. Secondly, there is no, as the center is not holding, thirdly is corruption. The one that the issue that Honorable Gaza put on the group is also an evidence that we are sitting in a crisis in this country. How can an MM of Steve Chwete call a councillor and threaten a councillor while a councillor was his constituency? I don't know if the councillor was the ANC, but I have a problem whereby I can't speak on behalf of the people. And the public rep, people are saying, no, we have elected you. Go and speak on our behalf. We don't have water here. We don't have electricity here. Everything is getting high. And then at the end of the day, the HOD of the department has to call me and tell me, I must not speak on behalf of the community. And there's no action. It tells you that the problem is not administratively. The problem is politically. Because once we solve the political problems, it will be easy to deal with administrative issues if we want to implement laws that should govern the municipalities. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Sorry for speaking too long.
Thank you, Honorable Mukali. It's a marathon of questions. Can I hand over to the minister and team? I've just come back if my issues won't be addressed through the responses that we get. Over to you, minister and team.
I think the team will take the question.
Can I see a show of hands on the colleagues who want to respond? I see the DG's microphone is on. The team, both Treasury and raise your hand, when they raise your hand, I can then I'll point at you.
Chairperson, I can respond to the questions from a Treasury perspective.
Okay, you should start then.
So, Chair, I'll try to be as quick as I can, Chairperson. So the first question was from Honourable Groenewald. He did ask in which terms of the legislation is there a provision that the municipality may be allowed to pass an unfunded budget, Chair. There is no such provision in the legislation. Section 18 of the MFMA indicates that the municipality must table a funded budget. So if I understood the question, there's no legislative requirements that say you can, Chairperson. The second point was by Honourable Brink. You did refer to the procurement bill, which will very soon go into the parliamentary process, Chair, once Cabinet has given us the green light to proceed. But the question by Honourable Brink was, can we give exemption to certain provisions in the legislation for municipalities to then have flexibility when it comes to procurement processes, Chair? Unfortunately, the way the legislation is crafted gives effect to the constitutional requirements. And therefore, to exempt one municipality not to follow the principles as per the Constitution, Chair, will be problematic. Hence, I think the opportunity for the members when the procurement bill is in the parliamentary process is to then help us to assist and to make sure that the procurement bill works for everybody and that it will facilitate proper service delivery going forward, Chair. Chairperson, as far as Honourable Spies is concerned, she's concerned that we are giving indications that we will not release the equitable share. Chair, the point is, if a municipality misuse taxpayers' money, which in most cases is the case, then we have a constitutional mandate as the National Treasury to introduce measures to uphold the legislation. So, Chair, just as an example, when we have stopped the equitable share in April 2015, because municipalities did not pay ESCOM, at that point the outstanding debt was 2.8 billion. Chair, we appeared at 23 parliamentary committees. We as a Treasury were crucified. How dare the Treasury implement the Constitution? Chair, today that amount is 57 billion rand. So I think the point I want to make is, if you allow us as the two institutions to implement the legislative framework as been designed, then there have to be consequences. Chair, in an election year, the interesting part is when we presented the Lekwa case to Cabinet, to appear to dissolve the council. That illustrates to me, Chairperson, that there is decisive political leadership emerging out of this process. So, Chair, I will fully support and endorse Honourable Kalepe's point that, unfortunate as bureaucrats, Chair, we can only manage the administrative part, but you cannot use administrative solution to solve political challenges. So, Chair, from our reading of a state of local government, essentially there's two overarching challenges, and this platform and this house is fundamental to assist us, as outlined by the Honourable Member. So we know there's political leadership related challenges, and we know there's managerial failure. And as the Honourable Member has indicated, as bureaucrats, we can only do so much, Chair. I think that is the question, Chairperson, Oh, and then there's just a last point. One of the honourable members has made the point. The Section 154 in the Constitution, Chair, is a support provided from national provincial government to municipalities. Honourable members should, this is just a request from my side, Honourable Chair, that we should not refer to Section 154 as an intervention. It is support that we have to provide. But Section 139 of the Constitution provides the hierarchy of interventions, and we as government is trying our best at this point in time. Yes, I'm not sure that's the message to me to stop talking. Thank you, Chair.
From the minister's side, I don't know what they're saying, but proceed. Proceed.
Chairperson, so that was essentially my last point that I wanted to make, Chair, that we should regard 154 as a support which we are required to provide from national provincial government, and Section 139 is then the intervention framework. So that's intervening, and you should only intervene as a last resort. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Thank you so much, Mr. Atin. Jacob, who's taking home? See, your hand is up. Okay.
Yes, I just wanted to respond to the question by Honorable Mam Chize on the service delivery plan of action that has been referred to and the 3 billion costing. So this is only for the Northwest province. So as MISA, we are leading on the Northwest intervention, more especially on issues of service delivery. So what we did when we put together the plan of action, we identified projects that we then costed, and we came to an estimate of 3 billion rands. And yes, indeed, we are not expecting that there's going to be additional funding coming from whether provincial or the national fiscus to fund these projects. The existing grants have to be utilized and repurposed to fund the service delivery plan of action. So what we are currently doing as MISA and the provincial COCTA department on service delivery, we are assisting municipalities to repurpose their need so that they can focus on water and sanitation projects, given the existing challenges of water shortages in the province. And then secondly, to deal with issues of aging infrastructure. NEEC has now been, the framework has been reviewed to allow municipalities to use 5% of the NEEC for infrastructure asset management planning. So we are supporting municipalities to put together business plans so that they can develop plans on asset management. And then secondly, municipalities are able to use 10% of the MIG to address issues of repairs and maintenance, refurbishment and so on, of aging infrastructure. So those are the interventions that we are currently implementing as MISA. The quick wins are already being implemented in some of the municipalities in the Northwest, where municipalities are using their own budgets to implement projects such as patching of potholes, fixing street lights and so on. So there is some progress that has been registered, although it's at a small scale, while we are still engaging with relevant stakeholders to mobilize additional funding to address the projects, especially those that require a lot of funds, such as your bulk infrastructure and so on. So thank you very much. Sorry, I have a bit of a cough. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Moana? Over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
We need to hear and see you as well.
Yes, my Chairperson.
Please proceed in that fashion.
Thank you very much. My apologies. The question on the impact of the MSIT and what it would do differently. What we have done now is to make sure that in terms of cooperative governance, we mobilize sector departments, but also we make sure that we work collaboratively with national sector departments together with provincial departments, and in the context of the DDM, this will also ensure that the champions become part of the support plans to make sure that they assist in unlocking some of the challenges that have been identified. And I'm saying this, Honorable Chairperson, because one of the strategic priorities of the DDM is to stabilize local government and enhance the involvement of both national and provincial champions who will then be part of ensuring that these challenges that have been identified are dealt with at a political also level. And another question related to, I think my colleague is from National Treasury has dealt with it on the difference between Section 154 and 139. Another thing that is going to be done differently this time is the fact that with the collaborative intervention framework that we are institutionalizing, municipalities will now be put under the correct mode of intervention, because the research and also lessons learned from the interventions that are currently taking place is that if an incorrect mode of intervention is applied, then you don't get the correct results. So I just thought that question that would be the impact of the MSIP. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mon. I'm trying to see. Judge Mon, over to you.
Yes, good morning, Honorable Chairperson, and also good morning to our Minister, the DM, as well as the members of the committee and my colleagues. I'm going to deal with a dispute in one of the municipalities, Chairperson. Thanks. Can I take off my camera?
Yes.
Thanks. Just to indicate, Chairperson, I'll respond to one or two questions of Councillor Kweza. Honourable Member Kweza, yes. The matter of the MM has been brought to our attention, I will be also engaging the MM in that municipality and ensure that there is a response to him very soon. And just to agree with what Honourable Member Mkalipi is indicating, when we were putting together the State of Local Government report, what was quite interesting for some of us as officials who have been in the system for some time is that the pillar of political was put aside. You know, in the past we had only governance, and then where politics and administration and meetings and things were incorporated, and it was blurry. So our minister insisted that we must really isolate it, because that's where the problems are emerging, and the impact on the rest of all the other pillars. That's the first part, and then hence, and because challenges, political solutions must be imported so that there can be restoration of stability in that municipality. That's one. Two, cabinet, when the minister submitted the report at cabinet advised us to then add another pillar of local economic development. That is also not articulating around the local economic development in rural areas. So through the DDM, that is the intention. So there is a pillar now of LED that is part of this this work, and as we going to really ensure that the one plan that are been finalized by the district municipalities, which incorporate the locals, you know, the entire space will begin to really look at each other, that the district space, including the local municipalities, to really leverage on all the opportunities and ensure that there is economies of scale across the board. I know that it is not a satisfactory answer to honorable member, but all I'm indicating is that there was a conscious directive by cabinet to say we must also incorporate that in our work that we are doing per se. But we agree entirely that the core problem in municipalities emanates from the political arena, and as long as that is not being dealt with, it will always have an impact on the rest of the other pillars. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Mohane. Is that all? I don't see any other end from the responses. Colleagues, are your questions adequately responded to? If not, let me get the already follow-up ends. Allow the DG to speak before I allow follow-up questions. DG?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Brothers. I thought that I would respond to the question as raised by the Honorable Chairperson, and this just relates to the actual DDA and what are some of the improvements that we've actually seen or expected through the DDM process. And perhaps, Chairperson, will also be quite happy to bring such a presentation to the portfolio committee. But perhaps just at a very high level, Chair, it's firstly to note that after the pronouncement by the President, we had to then launch three pilot sites. And of course, I think that the honourable members would recall that they are in Waterbury, Tedmini, and also in Owatambo. Over and above that, within those private sites, we also have to set up hubs and build a number of partnerships with technologies that we can ensure that we provide for COVID relief through some stimulus packages. And also, if you look at exactly how it is that we could be looking for the functioning of our intergovernmental structure. The other important thing is that we also have to be champions or political champions that were also designated for each of the districts. I think the other important thing that has been also undertaken is that we've had to look at a profile within each and every district, really just knowing and understanding exactly what that district is endowed with, and how it is that we can support, you know, those districts in leveraging what they are indeed endowed with. We also, through this process, have looked at implementing or starting the development of the template that would actually guide districts around exactly what they need to look to have by in the establishment of one plan, because ultimately within the DDM approach we want to ensure that we have one district that has one plan with one budget, and we are then currently undertaking a process at the moment where we will be doing an analysis of all the one plans, drop one districts that have submitted, and once we've completed that analysis, we'll be looking at what is that common thread that actually then runs through, you know, all the districts in terms of what needs to be improved, enhanced, or for instance, or for example, if there's anything that we need to do in the local economic development space, for instance, that is something that we will focus on, whether the internet is stay or stay, that is exactly we will be seeing how that we can support. I think the other thing that is also really important here to note is that we have also established some partnerships, and these are private partnerships where we have institutions that are partnering with us, so for instance the UN, IPPG and so on. And where we are then being assisted in looking at how that we can improve the job creation, for instance, in municipalities and areas. So we are looking at how it is that we can also continuously improve, but I can say this is me just at the top of my mind that I can then say we have come to just around the medium of process funding. And of course looking at it also not only bursting down to the district level, but also how to start between ourselves and our sector departments and putting our sector departments and sister departments closer, just in terms of what it is that they could be doing to ensure that the whole EDM approach is indeed implemented. So thank you, Chair. I think I would like to leave it at that, and I can just support
all the other comments that have been made by the DECOP team
and the National Institute. Thanks so much, Chair, and members. Honorable Minister. Honorable Khunna,
over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for Mr. Harting. That answered me quite straightforward to say that in terms of Section 18 of the MFMA, you cannot approve a funded budget. Now, the question for the following question would then be to the DG. DG, for say for example, the Freedom Front Plus as a political party go to court and says that all of these municipalities' budgets are actually not approved because you cannot approve an unfunded budget. It's 105 municipalities, if I heard correctly, and all of those 105 municipalities must then dissolve. What will then happen if the DG will give me a comment on that? But that's just something to think about. Thank you, Chair.
DG, can you respond to that first?
Chairperson, if you look at the process of the dissolution and how that is required to unfold, I think it's clear to me that it will be a huge indication that you know, most of these municipalities once dissolved, it will be difficult, from an administrative perspective for us to be able to really engage and provide any additional support. Of course, as we've outlined, technically it does then point out that, yes, we are more in crisis, as a country, as a whole, and perhaps I should just leave my answer to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning.
Good morning to you too, Honorable Mzeza. Honorable Mzeza, sorry.
Oh. May I continue, Chair?
Yes. Proceed.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, I have been troubled by networks. Now I'm connected. I've been getting in and out. In welcoming this presentation on the developed municipal support and intervention plans by COGTA and National Treasury, we are noting that on the slide on the state of local government barometer, it is concerning that we are getting almost about the four provinces where we that reflects that there are almost no municipalities that are on the green bar, on the green category. That means that there is no stability at all. And that is highly concerning, that almost four provinces do not have municipalities that are in a stable position or situation. That would be the first thing. The second chair is that these municipal support intervention plans or models as developed and presented, perhaps we still have to see whether they will bring about any effective change in the stability in our own municipalities. My concern would relate only that predominant on the causative factors and the effects of those municipalities migrating towards a dysfunctional status and some seriously cash steps is that one, I don't think that we have been effectively using the provisions of the Finance Management Act. That's in Section 71 reports. That as the province and national, both COGTA and Treasury, have we been effectively analyzing such Section 71 reports so that we are in a position to equally invoke adequate Section 154 support before municipalities would go to the status of being placed under Section 139. This presentation should actually have been looking at that particular area. How are we as a province and a national effectively using these reports as a window of monitoring municipalities so that we might intervene as early as possible? The last point, Chair, is that once we have these plans now developed and presented to us, I think where we have to strengthen as COGTA and National Treasury is the monitoring authority to see to it that these plans would actually work and be effective in restoring municipalities.
Yes, sir. Stay put like that. I was seeing half of your face.
Come again, sir.
I was seeing half your face. Stay
oh, sorry, sir.
Yes.
It must
end
with you. I'm saying, sir, perhaps,
must end with you,
that, we feel these municipal intervention plans, what should be factored in adequately should be the monitoring capability of both the province and the national, so that these plans would actually see the light at the end of the day. That would be my take, Chair. Thank you.
Teza, why are you laughing? Honorable Teza?
Thank you, Chair. You know, the DG, at least if he doesn't answer questions, at least she must then attempt to answer questions, because I don't find comfort in the responses that she has made to my questions. And the National Treasury never even attempted to answer the questions on rural areas and rural municipalities, because I'm not talking about the metro there. I'm talking about situation development and the division of revenue assuming through the equitable
people share that those municipalities will be able to collect revenue. What is the solution? Number two, when I go through this presentation, I don't see Bears not your local municipality as amalgamated problems that are besetting those communities. Actually mentioned here as a dysfunctional municipality. How do we have a municipality that is 125 million of 30 million meant for drought relief without knowing where that 25 million went, and then you have problems after problems that I will then bring to the attention of the committee later on. You then say you don't mention that municipality as a dysfunctional municipality. And I think, Chair, those are the questions. Thank you.
Are you done?
I'm done, Chair.
You're muted. Honorable Khonavai, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, yes, I think the DG didn't understand my question clearly. If the Act says that the annual budget must be funded, and it is the council goes on, the legislation also states that when a municipality do not adopt a budget, it must be dissolved. So, Chairperson, just to sketch a picture and some background in terms of this. So if the budget, there's a rule in law that says when something, one thing is being done irregular, everything that follows is being irregular. Therefore, the municipality did not adopt such a budget. Therefore, must actually go for the solution. But if you go on further, all those property rates and taxes that's being levied within that budget and the process of the budget is now irregular as well, and everybody is paying it. We've got 105 municipalities of unfunded budgets. So if somebody goes to court, for example, the political party, but it can be anybody from citizens of South Africa, and they go to court and it's being found that budget is irregular and that budget could not be approved, and all of those municipalities must be dissolved. It's 105 municipalities being dissolved. Now, certain recent taxes that actually cannot be levied in the law. So, DG, if you can answer me in terms of this. How is it possible then that unfunded budget is being approved? And you must remember, this question comes from a long time. A year back, we started asking this question, how is unfunded budget being approved? So this is the result if somebody goes to court. And DJ, I want your response on this because this is a greater impact than just government. It can dissolve, basically, service deliveries within the municipalities if somebody goes to court. What are you doing to rectify this? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Khumevan. You jump on the visit and you end. You forgot to lower your hand. Honorable Mpumza?
No, Chair. Sorry.
Okay. Thank you. My question to the DG, I want to understand whether visage intervention, monitoring and support bill covers all the matters contemplated in the intervention collaboration model. And then the follow-up question to that effect is that why is this model necessary, given that the bill is alleged to be almost ready for tabling in Parliament? We've been asking where is the monitoring and support bill, and we're told it's almost ready for tabling in Parliament. Then I'm raising this in relation to say, then, does this bill actually cover the matters contemplated in this intervention collaboration model that you said with us? And then I'm raising it based on the fact that there is a risk that the department might get fixated on developing models and addressing the real problems.
Then the other issue that I want to get clarity from you, Director General of the COP, is that what are the details of the criteria that have been developed for each of the 7 modes of intervention envisaging the constitution and the Municipal Public Finance Management Act? So those are the issues on my part. I see your hand is already up to respond. Did you?
Okay, no, thank you. Perhaps we may just go back to the Honourable Member. We did might have misunderstood his question and around what the Act is and in relation to the annual budgeting and how that is being funded and unfunded and what the impact would be on municipalities. I think the first thing to say, Honourable Chair, is that as the National Department, we do not approve the budgets, and especially the unfunded budgets. I think those are done through the province, through the Treasury in local province, and perhaps we could get assistance from your hunting in that. Perhaps you'll be able to table a bit of response as to how this is possible. And how does this then happen? Chairperson, just with regards to the questions around intervention collaboration model, and where we are as well with the empty bill, and the risk that the chairperson then highlights to us, in us perhaps not just focusing on models, but you know, making certain that the interventions that we do have in place would administratively bring about the change that is needed locally. I think, Chairperson, the first thing to say is that we are absolutely mindful, you know, of the fact that we don't want to just develop models, specifically because we want to see a change and an impact on the ground. What we presented today is specifically looking at not only the model itself, but perhaps the more important thing for us to have maybe brought to the table was some of the practical interventions that we are specifically looking at physically on the ground. The challenge we have, though, as national, is how is it that we, through the spheres, then go directly to the ground. And the only way we can do that is through our IGR process, where we are then collaborating and having discussions with each of our sector departments in order for us to be able to get that. So really it's about us bringing all the necessary role players and stakeholders to the table and making sure that as we look at some practical interventions that each of those either sectors or levels of the sphere are there to do that. And we are also practically driving some of the interventions through MISA, especially if you look at anything that's infrastructure related. So there are some practical elements that we are also looking at, Chairperson. So if you also then look at the empty bill itself, I don't think Dr. Nigel is in the room, but he could have shared exactly at which point we are. But I do know that we have completed all consultations with most stakeholders, and we are at the next stage then of making sure that we have our submissions going on. Thank you.
The question, not about the process, maybe I need to repeat because the question remained unanswered. The question was whether the bill covers the matters contemplated in this intervention collaboration model. And then on the process, we were told that the bill is ready for tabling in Parliament.
And then the issue here is that I want to understand why is this model necessary all of a sudden, given that the bill is already being ready for Parliament. And then the issue was around whether the bill, because this is coming after the bill has been consulted, as you have rightly said, whether all these matters that you are raising in the intervention model are there in the bill. That was the question. And then the other issue, we wanted to understand the details of the criteria that have been developed for each of these seven modes of intervention that are there in the Constitution and in the Municipal Finance Management Bill, because this is the basis of why we are presenting this bill, this presentation to us today. So we want the details of the criteria that you have developed for each of these seven models, the detail of it. This is what my question is all about. But let me allow, while the DG is there, let me allow Mr. Hacking to deal with this issue of unfunded budget. But still, I'll still come back to the department because you are responsible for allocating this budget to these municipalities. On what basis are you allocating resources which we know is unfunded? Over to you, Mr. Hacking.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. I'll try to respond to a number of the questions as well. So I think the first point, Chair, I want to make is that national government, not us nor COCTA, runs municipalities. So I think it needs to be understood that the council, the way our system is designed, our legislative framework, and specifically the Public Finance Management Act and the Municipal Finance Management Act, we have a decentralized financial management regime. So firstly, the council approved the budget. Our role in this process and the question on the budget side, Chair, this is the Treasury's competency. So unfortunately, even if the DG wanted to answer the question, it's more on my side, Chair, as the person responsible to facilitate and oversee the budget reform process for local government. So Chairperson, firstly, the council make the choices. Our job as the bureaucrats is to assess the budgets of municipalities. We do it religiously, Chair, for the 17 big cities, the National Treasury. Provincial Treasury does it for the delegated municipalities. And then we offer advice. So by implication, we have a preventative role to play in this process. Unfortunately, Chair, the hard reality, if you look at the facts and the evidence, you'll see that when the municipality presents the budget to council, sometimes they ignore our advice completely. And Chair, I think in the OR, not OR Tambo, the other municipality in Eastern Cape, the name escaped me now, it's very clear that the Provincial Treasury has advised the council what needs to be done. For some reason, they've decided to ignore that advice. So, Chair, to answer Honourable Groenewald directly, so if a municipality don't table the budget and adopt it as per the legislative framework, and your tabling is on 31st of March, adoption normally by the 30th of May, but the latest is 50 June. If for some reason a municipality can't table the budget and adopt it on time, then automatically Section 139 kick in, and the province has to then take charges. So the number is 108, Honourable Groenewald, and we have choose to work with municipalities to guide them, to facilitate. Unfortunately, this bad practice is continuing, and hence we went to obtain the appropriate political decisions in order for the National Treasury to activate consequence management in the form of the equitable share. Chair, as far as the Section 71 monitoring system is concerned, we have implemented this provision as a treasury. It started in 2006 and 7, when only 43 municipalities in the country reported. Chair, we've worked with them for 2.5 years, and today I can report with confidence all 257 municipalities religiously report, and the National Provincial Treasuries publish this information, provinces monthly, and National Treasury quarterly, including conditional grant information. So, Chair, that practice has been institutionalized. The hard reality is the utilization of that, Chair, is the problem. So even if the signs are in the numbers, the activation of the consequence management and the oversight part, this is where we saw that there's challenges, Chairperson. So for the benefit of the members, we publish once a year a consolidation of all municipal budgets. We publish quarterly the Section 71 results, including conditional grants. We publish the State of Local Government report religiously annually, and on top of that, the Auditor General report. So, Chair, in our opinion, there's sufficient instruments that will facilitate oversight. It's the activation of a next step, Chair, that's the challenge. And therefore, these discussions is enormously helpful, because if the oversight committees in the municipality, the impact committee, as well as the provincial executive council, do not take this information and do something, then, Chair, it will not serve any real purpose. But the system is in place, and all that information, Chair, is on our website at least for the last 10 years on a quarterly basis. So I would again encourage the members, if they have some information, if it's not helpful enough, that, Chair, those municipalities, I would propose, with the permission of a Chair, that we call them in, and they must come and explain. The mayor and the executive members of that municipality must appear before this House, Chair, that's my proposal, if I may, to come and explain why they are adopting unfunded budgets. Because by implication, Chair, what it means is you're living beyond your means, and therefore, if you have a challenge, then you think it's somebody else's problem. Chair, apologies to Honorable Cesar for not responding to the Division of Revenue Act comment, Chair. So every year before when the minister tabled the budget in Parliament, we produce the annual Division of Revenue Act, Chair, and it gets presented to all the appropriate committees in Parliament. So, Chair, what we are saying as the National Treasury, the bill is highly redistributive. We are actually using that as an instrument. If you look at the fiscal framework that we present for the country, but also for provinces and also for local government, that essentially we are compensating those rural municipalities. And if you look at the Division of Revenue annual presentation to Parliament, Honourable Chair, you will see how we redistribute from the metros vis-a-vis the others. And again, if there's a need that presentation has to be presented to this committee, Chair, I'm certain that our Director General will be willing to facilitate, to empower the colleagues and the members to understand how that process works. So again, once again, apologies to the Honourable Member. The point is, where we sit, given this discussion, Chair, we also don't think it would be appropriate to put more money into the system if we know there's failure to spend money, if there's failure to use the money productively, and on top of that, if municipalities don't collect the revenue that they legitimately are supposed to collect. Chair, that number is standing at 250 billion rand. Services rendered to the community, and the municipalities have not necessarily collect that amount. And we believe if they only put in effort to collect a fraction of that amount, then there will be enough resources to assist with the infrastructure outlined by our MISA. To conclude, if we do and somebody do decide to take those 108 municipalities to court, there's a high probability that the court will rule in favor of them. But, Chair, it will be absolutely crisis at that point if you suddenly have to deal with 108 municipalities in one process. And this is where the capability and the capacity of the two departments have to be considered, because we feel that a progressive process will add much more value than complete radical approach. At the same time, we do advocate that the triggers that's there in the Constitution needs to be activated. Chairperson, I hope that assists. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mr. Hakim. Definitely, we are going to call those municipalities as you've proposed. Honorable Hunevald?
Thank you, Chair. And just a quick question then. I've listened to the DJ and to Mr. Atari, and there's no national department that's responsible for a municipality, and I can understand the decentralization of the legislation in terms of that. The question is, there must be an overview, and there must be a process where the department actually look at the implementation of these laws in municipalities. So we've got all of this legislation, and most of the municipalities do not implement these laws. Who is then responsible to see that they do comply with legislation? A quick question, Chairperson, I think we need clarity on that, because if everybody says it's not my responsibility, then we have to go to court to keep the municipality to bay. In terms of the national legislation, who is then responsible that the implementation thereof actually happens? If I can get a quick answer on that. Thank you, Chair.
Between yourself, DJ, and Mr. Hatching, who will speak on this question as raised by Honorable Kulevich?
Chair, perhaps the DJ can go first if she wanted.
No, thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson, and to the Honorable Member. Yana, I'll leave that to you, if you don't mind. Thanks. I'll take the question from the Chair after.
So, Chairperson, if I may, so as the custodian of the Public Finance Management Act, the Municipal Finance Management Act, when it comes to municipal fund competency, so I think there's no doubt, Honorable Groenewald, that this is a reflection of the work the National Treasury has done. We have institutionalized a practice where we track this information, and we've done it now for 10 consecutive years. So, Chair, progressively, we are also, as a Treasury, reached the point where we think that we need to go to the next levers in the legislation that help us to enforce the Act. Even our colleagues at SELGA, even our colleagues at COCTA, is in support. So, Chair, the point that we've made, that, and we have tracked this matter to our two political forums, including Cabinet, and the decision is no money will flow to a municipality that has an unfunded budget in the future. No municipality will get any national contribution if they have a disclaimed audit opinion. And thirdly, Chair, the points that the Honourable Members has made is there's two mayors, two speakers, or two municipal managers. Those municipalities will also not get any funding from the national government until the political problem has been resolved. So, Chair, that's all I can contribute at this point. I hope it helps in responding to Honourable Groenewald. Thank you, Chair.
Good, Chair. Sorry, Chair, about that. If I may ask Mr. Alvin Williams.
Yes,
to just clear me. And then when these penalties happen, which are intended indeed to correct some of the shortcomings experienced in municipalities pertaining to political problems and administrative problems, what then becomes of the communities that need service in line with the constitution? Because that's where my worry is. And how do you seek to remedy a situation wherein, apart from the fact that this seeks to remedy that situation, how do you then expect that particular municipality will ever improve? And what is the envisaged time for a particular intervention to get anything? And then have you considered that the end users of these particular services will then compromise the people themselves, who are the end users of municipal services, as it were? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Minister.
Then I'll hand over to the Minister. Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, thank you, the Minister, as well, to give me the opportunity before she comes in. Chairperson, I heard what Mr. Hartling is saying, but the fact is that municipalities do not comply with legislation. Isn't there any other, can I say, resolution that we can take where we can compel these municipalities to actually follow the law? Isn't there a head in government that actually has to check if they do comply? And I'm not talking only about budgets. You heard about the J.P. Marks municipality's mayor that has been elected with and not complied with legislation. So there's all of these examples throughout South Africa of municipalities do not comply with legislation. So if I listen to Mr. Hartling correctly, it says that the only way for us as political parties to compel municipalities to comply with legislation is to go to court. And then I agree with him, if we go to court, in terms of the unfunded budget, it won't be progressive. But if that is the only way that we can compel municipalities to keep to law, isn't that our only remedy then? Thank you, Chair.
Minister, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the members of the Portfolio Committee. I just wanted to make a comment about what Ms. Deb has said, because I agree that when you withhold the funds from the municipality, those funds are actually not meant for the council. They are meant for the people, to deliver services to the people. So it means at the end of the day, it's the people that suffer. We have tried and we're still trying. We have said, can we be allowed through MISA maybe to assist the municipality in implementing them to do, especially when it comes to service delivery, some of the grants need and so on. And even maybe use national facilities to actually assist the municipalities, but we're not yet getting agreement with that, because what happens is the municipality doesn't use the funds. It then uses that, those funds used to be given to municipalities that can use the funds, which means those who have get more, and those who have little and are not able to use, the little gets taken away from them. So we are hoping that there would be an agreement, both from Treasury and SALGA, assist them to plan for infrastructure spend and so on. So we hope that at some stage there would be agreement that National can assist them. We're not taking their function, but we want to assist them to utilize those funds for the sake of the people who get denied the services when those funds are withheld. Just wanted to say that.
Thank you, Minister. DG, there were questions that you said you're going to respond to after Mr. Harding. Over to you.
And maybe, sorry, before the DG, on the bill that is being discussed, it's not ready to be taken to Parliament because it still has to go to Cabinet. But as you can imagine, this bill has to be so extensively consulted because it's about how, when, and how, and intervention can take place. But as some of the things that are developing, obviously, the bill still has to go to Cabinet before it goes to Parliament. And if there is an indication that you must include some of the issues, then it has to go to Cabinet.
Measures. We already have a situation where municipalities are incapacitated, therein, there is no solution for that. And then National Treasury comes to say that they will hold the monies. And we already have a situation where that particular division of revenue, which then does not provide a solution in terms of strengthening and capacitating local government, is carried out without consideration of the fact that skills are unavailable. And people then suffer as a result, will then suffer as a result of incompetence of individuals that are not adhering to the legislation. There are people that are responsible for that within the municipal space. There are accounting officers, there are political leaders, and so forth. Why not strengthen consequence management on those, rather than saying that you withhold monies? I don't understand. Maybe you need to unlock me here. Because the result of that is that the end users of these services will not get the services. Almost like suspending a municipality and just render it useless and say that we will withhold money if you don't, if there's unfunded budget. It might look like a strong solution, but has it then considered the issues relating to the services that are plummeting in municipalities without any show for solutions first there in? And then you can start saying that then we will withhold monies and all those things that you are saying.
Not that the DG is here today. On this list of 64 municipalities, because last time when we interacted on Mass West, we have raised this issue of the failed intervention that we've seen happening. The critical issue is way in the capacity, the type of administrators that are put there. I think Temba Fusi is on record saying that we don't have that capacity to support and assist municipalities. Then the question is then why go this route, whereas there's no team and capacity that will then be able to then come in and assist with this intervention that has been made. So won't it be that intervention on paper at the end of the day, there won't be any result that's coming through? What is that? Because at some point we had seen some adverse way those former local governments were, I think I recall it was during the tenure of Minister Kize. All those who are technical experts in the municipalities, there was an advert for them to register on the database. Maybe we are to be told in that development, because intervention without the necessary capacity in terms of human beings, I don't know how are we going then to yield the required outcome. So that is the issue that I want both COPTA and Treasury to respond to, say, how are you going to deal with that? And then the issue that I've raised sharply, maybe out of this meeting, because I didn't hear it coming clearly, is this issue around the actual implementation, a package of intervention to assist these municipalities. You might have spoken to it in passing, but I think we need to actually see the actual document so that we are able to then look at it and monitor it. So that's the issue that one wanted to then understand. Because also the issue about close-up reports that we've raised, I have heard the minister saying that his provinces cannot bring them. I think this is the matter we are noting. We are going to then ask all the relevant MECs. In fact, our plan is that those ministries, that even when we call them, I think we had started a project in the last term wherein we had been talking to all these MECs in the province on the 639 interventions. So we'll have to do a spreadsheet to say these are the ones and then let us get the close-up reports. Because of concern to us throughout, which we're still going to raise with this kind of intervention, there is no single one which we have asked to say, this is the intervention that is made in terms of section 139 and it has yielded a positive result. Except to say, when these administrators and that intervention come to the end, the municipality becomes worse. It reverts back. In fact, in other instances, post the intervention is worse. So those are the issues that are of concern to us that will also then raise. Then I'll allow the team to respond as we are working towards closing this meeting because there's plenary sittings. Members must take a break in order to attend plenary. Over to the team, and the minister will have to then have a closing remarks on all this. Mr. Hakim, then the DG will follow, then it will be the minister.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. I have to say the last set of questions is becoming increasingly difficult, and I hope that I don't overstep my pay grade and my mandate. So, Chair, I think... Sorry, Honorable Chairperson. So I hope that, as I indicated, the last set of questions is becoming increasingly difficult for me as a bureaucrat to answer, but let me attempt, and I hope that I don't overstep my pay grade and my mandate, Honorable Chair, but let me try. So I think the first point I want to make, after implementing the Municipal Management, Finance Management Act for 17 years, in theory, we should have a perfect local government. If we implemented the same legislation, we will definitely have a perfect local government system. So a lot of international people have told us there's nothing wrong with the design of our constitution and our legislative framework. It's the actual implementation. So, Chair, that is the starting point. The second point is the questions asked by Honorable Caesar is difficult because it's about a trade-off. So where municipalities are dysfunctional and when there is infighting in council, then you can equally argue that no services are actually delivered to the community. So the trade-off is, do you allow that to happen and the community suffer, or do you deal with a problem decisively and then try to find a solution? So, Chair, this is where obviously we'll be guided by our political principles. Chair, as far as the other questions is concern. So the support and the other big issue that I want to flag, Chair, if you look at the allocations that we've made for infrastructure, the MIC allocation, and you accumulate that over the last 25 years or 27 years, Chair, in theory, if we should have no backlogs in municipalities, because if you add those amounts, then it's not as if there was not sufficient provision made. Again, the backlogs that we are observing in the space of municipalities is actually increasing, Chair. So the key question is, what happened with that investment? Chair, the third point is, we are spending on average about 2.8 billion rand on capacity-related programs. The Treasury have commissioned a study, and we have not concluded that yet, Chair, to see exactly what is the capacity building programs is buying from taxpayers' money. Chair, that number is unfortunately now almost 8 billion rand. So the key question is, how long will we have to continue to provide support and building the capacity of our local government? So Chair, it's a very difficult question because we are highly sensitive as national government, both ourselves as well as COPTA, in the allocation process before Parliament to make sure that it can be available so that can't be used as an excuse of not providing services. But Chair, the hard reality, if you look at the value for money and what we buy, the question is, what is those options? And Chair, unfortunately, I don't have all the answers, but we will continue pushing as far as it's possible administratively, Chair, to do the best under the circumstances. And ultimately, the political related challenges, Chair, that is something that I'm on dangerous ground. So, Chair, let me keep quiet. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. DG. Over to you.
Chair?
Yes.
Before the DG, I'm provoked by what Ian was just saying now. Earlier on, I also spoke strongly regards to the political solutions into our problems in local government. But, Chairperson, you are correct to say that we need to also, administrative side, we need to have a strong arm in terms of our COPTA at a national level, at a provincial level, although it's also going to... I'm distracted here by this one. So my point is, Chairperson, if I can make an example, you know, we hold municipalities accountable in this committee, but there is a gap. For instance, if I can make an example with the last meeting that we had with Beas Nodie and Etiquini. And Etiquini, it was not the first time having this follow-up meeting. So I just want to expose the gap between COPTA and municipalities. For instance, we took a decision here in regards to Etiquini municipality who have been come to this committee because of the petition. And then we said, no, let us resolve these issues, and then they are going to come back also to report after we have tried to intervene that time. But what is my observation? Exactly what is your point, the Chair and other members, is to say that there is no monitoring system that is convincing in terms of what we have taken as a decision and what is happening. For instance, at Equini, we took decisions, we said, no, do this, brought in this committee, but back, they are going to rush there because there's no one from COPTA who's saying, Honorable Mkalip, you raised these things at a COPTA level. Are you happy? Are the municipality attending to those things, to those issues? Because correctly, the minister is saying that if there's no services that is going to them, that is a process by the municipality. So it's people who are suffering on the ground. So therefore, the DG, when he's responding to this one, she must also tell us their monitoring system, is it effective? Knowing very well that the municipalities, they're also empowered and protected in terms of the constitution. But since COPTA is supposed to monitor them, I'm just making an example of this recent development, saying that I'm the one who's pushing municipalities, pinning them down on what decision we took here. But there's no one from COCTA level to say that, let me facilitate, let me ensure that whatever decision was taken at a COCTA level is implemented by municipalities. Until last minute, when this committee will say, come back again. Let us check if there is a progress report from 3 months ago. And if the monitoring system from COCTA level is happening, some of these problems that you are encountering on a daily basis, complaining that people are not getting their services, can be minimized if there is a proper monitoring system from COCTA itself. The less I talk about provincial governments, the better, Chairperson. Because, as I said earlier on, maybe we need to revisit the arrangement of a compromise position, because I don't know what is the role of provincial government. Let me just pause the chair before the DG to come, and then thank you very much, Chairperson.
Doctor, thank you, Honorable Mkalipi. Over to you, DG.
Well, thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson and members. Chair, just on the first concern that you raised around having capacity to actually provide support that would be needed around the interventions that we are proposing. And of course, the response that was received through the EDG chamber in the last sitting. It's just that you, Chairperson, there is a concern that we do have capacity, but the capacity is more in line with the funding. And whether we do have the funds to put the team together, that will be able to be enrolled and support where the support is required. That is something that we are currently looking at, though, within the department. We reflect on the presentation and the indication that we will also be looking at putting together that response team, you know, that will be there to provide that additional support. So institutionally, we are looking at how we are arranging ourselves and how it is that we can then provide that additional capacity so that we can provide the additional support. But of course, we're doing that within the financial year, and of course, within the constrained budget. But something that we are hopeful we'll be able to at least improve. Just on the second point, as raised by then our honourable and whether we do have a strong enough monitoring and evaluation system, you know, that will indicate that we issue a raise, you know, that the oversight does then happen or is undertaken time. Chairperson, I'd like to ask Mahalwa maybe to explain what that human system that they're using. I am aware as well, and through the team, that we are reviewing our own energy process and system, and just for us to ensure that we become more effective around the oversight that we are providing. And I want to also just then commit to Honourable Kalipi that I will most certainly go back on the item as it was raised around the meeting just to see why it did not necessarily respond or provide the oversight that we should have without coming through as a follow. So thank you so much, Chairperson and Honourable.
Minister, over to you.
Thank you very much.
Before that, I was told Mama will answer something.
Good afternoon, and members. With regards to the monitoring of local government, between ourselves and National Treasury, we started a process of developing indicators that are relevant and that will assist us to measure performance of local government correctly. As you may be aware, Chairperson, that currently we office through the best ourselves and National Treasury, specifically Jan Hatting, we established what we call a joint planning, budgeting and reporting reforms, specifically to make sure that we measure the right things. But that system would actually also result in the minister reviewing the planning and performance management regulations of 2001. What we have done jointly is that we started developing indicators for each category of municipality, starting with the metro, and we are now on the third year, my colleague is here, in the implementation of those indicators, and we are progressively making sure that municipalities understand what are these things that need to be monitored and reported upon. This is part of the early warning system that we are moving towards. We then, when metros have institutionalized, developed indicators for districts, we realize that when we monitor municipalities, it's important for us to monitor them in terms of their powers and functions, which is what we have done now. There is a specific set of indicators for the districts, and within the districts, there are specific indicators for districts who have a water services authority and the rest of local municipalities. And within the rest of local municipalities, we also have included the secondary cities as part of us making sure that we also monitor the IUDF. The reason why we're taking this approach, Chairperson, is to make sure that these indicators also include the global requirements as in terms of the SDGs, Agenda 2063, and the SADC indicators, so that come the time of reporting, municipalities are not burdened to report. So the reason why we also did that was to reduce the burden of reporting. We managed to mobilize the whole of the sector departments to say what are the outcomes that we want to see in municipalities. We are at the stage now where we are piloting all these municipalities, which this steering committee level includes National Treasury and COCTA, co-chaired by myself and Jan Hatting. The Auditor General is also part of our team to make sure that these, when these indicators are regulated, everyone understands them, and the state South Africa, so that we don't repeat what information that is already available. DPME is part of us, and SALGA is also part of us, and the provinces. So, but we are still monitoring municipalities through the best to basics, and we are at the same time piloting these indicators, which will result in the minister regulating them, reviewing the 2001 regulations in terms of reporting and of monitoring and reporting. And we have now at this stage made sure that all the provinces are aware of what we are doing. And the reason why we are doing this is because we are saying to the provinces, in terms of the Constitution Section 1556, you are responsible to monitor and performance of local government and build capacity. So the role of the provinces has been elevated. We are taking them along, taking into consideration that there are differing capacity levels. However, we are supporting those that are to measure the right things. Thank you, Chairperson.
And we have the last word by
the minister so that we can close this meeting.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members of the portfolio committee and treasury and the corporate teams. I don't have a lot to say, but I just want to take maybe from where Honorable Mkhalipi left. Honorable says he doesn't know what the work of provinces is and why they are there. But unfortunately, the Constitution does give the provinces a lot of responsibility when it comes to municipalities. In fact, according to the Constitution, the provinces are the first line of call when it comes to national affairs. They need to intervene or is unwilling and so on. So it's clear that when it comes to municipalities, the provinces are the ones that have the responsibility. So I think honorable members and honorable Mkhalipi, whether we like or think the provinces shouldn't be there, but when it comes to local government, they are very critical. A lot of the things we're talking about here are really the responsibility of the provinces according to the Constitution. But otherwise, thank you very much.
Thank you, colleagues. This is the matter that is ongoing that will continue to follow up on the state of the local government. Having listened to the inputs of everybody who participated in this meeting, there are matters that we are going to carry forward, like these municipalities that have been operating on unfunded budgets, then the close-up reports on the interventions, and then I should have reason to believe that we'll continue to engage on these matters on a quarterly basis so that we then attend to these matters. Then I want to also thank all of you colleagues, including the minister, deputy minister, the team from Treasury, for having made yourself available to interact with the committee. The meeting gets adjourned. Thank you so much, colleagues. Quickly grab your lunch so that you'll be able to attend plenary starting, I suppose, now at 2. Yes. Thank you, colleagues. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Bye-bye.
Okay.